The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
Remember when they had us dress up in the old uniforms 2019 before the Packers-Bears game, the 100th anniversary of the NFL? Right. Every once in a while, I look down at my phone, and there's a picture of you and me wearing those old freaking uniforms. And, of course, you're standing next to me. It's like the movie poster for Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito.
Okay. All right, out of the gates, man. That last photo. Can we pull that last photo up, please?
You mean of me, you leaning on me? You mean that one?
That's
me carrying you as always?
That's not real. That is photoshopped. It looks great, but that is not a real photo.
I think it's real.
That is not the photo.
I think it's good.
It is not real.
Take that down, Courtney, Kristen. Make sure we get it on social media just so everybody knows how small and puny Florio is.
Not real. You are a giant, but you are not that much more gigantic than me.
Little mini Mike there. Little bitty mini Mike.
There are people who think I am 5'2", 5'3". Not that there's anything wrong with being 5'2", or 5'3".
Yes,
I'm not saying that that's a problem.
Right, right.
But there are people who think I am,
yes.
And then they see me,
yes.
And they're like, oh, wait a minute,
yes.
You're not 5'2", or 5'3".
Right.
You're almost 6 feet tall.
Right, right. No, I get that a lot. I do. I get it a lot where people, hey, well, Florio, what is he, about 5'7", 5'8"? And I'm like, actually, no. Florio's kind of like a big 5'11", and then, you know, and then I get into like my scouting talk, and people are like, well, what do you mean be a big 5'11"? He's kind of got square shoulders, he's got long arms, right? He's got some of that structure to him. So yeah, you are. I don't know what it is that people see in this picture or the screen or the videos that you do that makes them think you're small or smaller, but I'll verify you are bigger than people think. That is for sure.
Well, it could be that most of the people who do what I do look like they're on loan from the Lollipop Guild. That might have something to do with it.
You're funny.
I mean, when in Rome.
Which ones are you talking about? Who are you talking about? I don't know.
All of them. All of them. Just pick one. All of them. Jay Glazer, God love him. He's the chairman of the Lollipop Guild. And all the rest of them.
I hope he puts you in a UFC headlock after that. Please, Jay.
Oh,
I'll help you out.
He's short, but he can kill me.
He's rocked up.
First time I ever met him. I met him in 2009.
Right.
And he walked up to me, and he put his thumb right into this spot.
Yeah, he's got
base
all these
of your neck.
Right, right.
Where it could kill you.
Yeah.
And he pressed it down, and I couldn't breathe. So anyway, I won't see him for a while, and by the time I see him, he'll forget. He's got the attention span of a gnat. He will long forget what
I'll
I'm
remind
saying
him.
Now.
I'll remind him.
Whenever. Thanks.
No
hey,
problem.
He said you're short. Well, I am short. I'm kind of famous for that.
I'm kind of famous for that. You know? Hey, he's short. It is funny, though.
That's the thing. Hey.
Yeah, go ahead.
The thing about Jay Glazer, let me just say this, and I love Jay.
Yeah.
I've known him for years. He and I.
He's awesome.
We have a link because we both kind of landed in this business in unconventional means, and the people who entered through conventional means hate us because we slipped through the back door or we made our own door. In my case, I made my own door, and they don't like it. Like, I mean, I guess I'm like, you know, a groundhog or a rat. You make your own door into the house. Here I am. Deal with me. But when you're around Jay, and this is where we're all different from the persona that we convey on TV. When you're around Jay, and this does not come across on TV, when you're around him, it's kind of like being around a dog that you're not quite sure if the dog is going to bite you. That's what it's like when you're around Jay.
He definitely got a little of that. Yeah, it's some attitude. He's got a little of like that defensive lineman angriness in him a little to a degree. Like I always talk about, right? The offensive linemen are cows. The defensive linemen are ornery bulls who are just ready to fight and do stuff. He's got a little of that in him, right? Like it's like the Mike Tyson syndrome. Hey, he's nice, but he's got a twinkle in his eye like a pit bull that he might bite me at some point. I'm not sure, right? I mean, it's kind of that. Or this tough middle linebacker that you come across every now and then. He is a meathead trapped in a smaller body, and you know, he's got that attitude about him. But I hear you there, Mike. I totally, all the way.
He does that UFC stuff, the mixed martial arts, and he was very secretive about it for years, and then he just like blew up and threw his arms up and said, "Hey, everybody, this is what I do." Because I guess he used to be at CBS, and then he was at Fox, and he was overly discreet about it, and then at some point the switch flipped and he leaned into it, and you see videos of him. You know, he's got that gym out there, or used to in L.A. I don't know if he still does, and he's out there doing that stuff all the time, training guys. He went through a long stretch where he was training a lot of the players. He still might be, for all I know. Anyway, I got some old business to take care of.
You do?
Now that we went down the Twins rabbit hole, and we have established the fact that photo is fake.
All right, that's
fake.
We have proven
the photo is fake.
It is interesting how so many people on TV and actors and all that are short. I will say that, right?
Yes.
That is like definitely something you notice.
Than you think.
Or it could be either way. Like I met Vince Vaughn at the Super Bowl. He was 6'3" and, you know, awesome to talk to and all that. But for the majority, I think a lot of them are. And it's kind of like a psych study or a human, you know, physiology study or whatever. Why is that? I always wonder.
Nailed it. Stuck the landing.
Got it.
With a little wobble.
A little wobble, but I got it.
A little wobble.
Thank you. But yeah, it is funny how, you know, most of the actors I've met in my life, you know, again, nothing wrong with being short or whatever, but I think it feels like they're even, I don't know if they're shorter than the normal population or if you're built them up in your brain and you're expecting them to be bigger. Which one is it? I don't know. But in my days growing up as Phil Simms' son and, hey, playing in the NFL, I've gotten to meet so many of them. And, yeah, it is kind of surprising how many actors you meet on TV and you go, wow, he's shorter than 5'8", or he's shorter than 5'7", and, you know, I always wondered if there was something to that.
Well, we're led to believe they're taller than they are.
I think that's what it is.
The magic of the medium. And this is how this all came up. Yesterday, you were talking about how when The Rock is on set at Fox,
that's right,
he stands as far away from Gronk as he can.
Yes, he
can.
Because
Gronk is a giant.
Right.
And Rock is not. And that's how it works. Hey, quick story. And this is going way down the Back to the Future rabbit hole, but this is out there. This is proven. This is fact. Now, the woman who played Jan on The Office, I can't remember her name.
Yeah.
But The Office is available exclusively on Peacock. The Superfan episodes, extended cuts, awesome. New season was put up not that long ago. I think season 7 now. So there's like 7 seasons of extended episodes there. I get paid for this week. She was going to be Marty McFly's girlfriend in Back to the Future. Now, there was another actor who was originally going to be Marty McFly, and I can't remember his name either. Eric something? Either way, he was going to be Marty McFly, and they hated him. They hated him because he saw it as like this tragedy that this teenage boy gets sucked back to 1955 and he might lose his entire existence. And when you think about it, it does kind of have
scary.
A dark edge to it.
Right.
That you got to figure all this stuff out
right.
or you will disappear from existence. And at one point in the movie, his hand is beginning to disappear as he's playing the guitar at the Fish Under the Sea dance. Anyway, Enchantment Under the Sea dance.
That's right.
Anyway,
you.
When they fired the guy, Eric Stoltz, when they fired the guy who was going to be Marty McFly, and they brought in Michael J. Fox, they had a problem. The woman who plays Jan on The Office towered over Michael J. Fox, towered over him. So out went Jan, in came whoever it was that played Marty McFly's girlfriend in the original Back to the Future.
Yeah, right.
Originally was someone different than Elizabeth Shue.
That's interesting. Interesting.
Played the girlfriend and eventually his wife in Back to the Future 2, but it was somebody else in the first one, but it was going to be Jan from The Office.
Right.
There's your fact that you might not have known before today and is completely useless to your life.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, we all need a little of that. I got one too, right? I've met so many stars and been so fortunate in my life. It's always amazing to meet them, and I'm always like honored, really, in a lot of ways, or you know, just like wow, like it's so cool, right? One time in my life, I can remember being disappointed. One time, I was a kid. And it had to do with the height. And I'm going to say I was probably in fourth or fifth grade, right around there. And I was in the airport, and I saw Macho Man Randy Savage. And, you know, just Macho Man, you know, all jacked up and all that stuff, right? Macho Man was like 5'7", right? And I was like in fourth grade or fifth grade. And I was like almost as tall as him. And that was like a big disappointment.
Did you do the Danny DeVito
thing? No, I didn't go, hey, you're short. Hey, Dad, he's short. Dad was nearby. He was nearby. But I remember that going like, oh, that made me think differently about wrestling and everything from that point on. Because in my mind, I thought, man, Macho Man Randy Savage looks like he's about 6'4", he's about 255, and he could play middle linebacker for the New York Giants. And I met him, and I went, well, damn, all the New York Giant linebackers will kick the crap out of you. All right, so it all changed my thought process there.
I can't believe you've got a Randy Macho Man Savage story, because I've got a Randy Macho Man Savage story, and I thought I've told you this before.
I think you have, but I can't remember.
1986.
Right.
Pittsburgh Airport.
Right.
I'm going to my flight, and I see Randy Macho Man Savage coming my way with jeans, tank top.
Yeah.
Muscles on his ears.
That's what he was
like
wearing when I met him. Yep.
He was wearing a weightlifting belt. You know that big old tan weightlifting belt they used to wear? I don't know that they wear that anymore. They probably have something more sophisticated. He's wearing a weightlifting belt in the airport, and he's in bare feet. And his manager, who became his wife, Miss Elizabeth, she was like walking 6 feet behind him. And it may have been, I don't want to be seen with that guy walking around the airport in his bare feet with a weightlifting belt.
That's
it was
hilarious.
Like the weirdest thing. Yeah. It's like, what the hell is it? What did I just see? There's Randy Savage, weightlifting belt, bare feet, just got off a plane. Maybe he was working out on the plane. Maybe like that's what led to Russell Wilson doing high knees on the way to London. Like you got a long flight, you get in a workout, you do a little lift, you run around barefoot on the plane. I don't know, but that was Randy Savage.
I don't know.
1986.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Randy Savage. I think Randy Poffo was his real name, and his brother was Leapin' Lanny Poffo, another pro wrestler. And Randy Poffo played baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Wow, look at you. You're full of useless facts today.
All sorts of useless facts. Yeah. I'm full of a lot of things. Let's see Gronk next to The Rock, just to prove that Chris's instincts are accurate. Is that can't be. That can't be. I think The Rock is standing on the hood of a car like Tirico was when he was standing next to you in the booth at that Michigan.
You're funny. Yeah, I would think it's a little more than that. Maybe that picture is just doing – you know, Rock a favor there with how it's lined up. I don't know. Or maybe he is standing on something. We do know that could go on as well. But yeah, meeting Rock and being around him, I've gotten to see him a few times at Super Bowls. Didn't get to meet him, but close to him. You know, Rock, I would say, is what would you want to say? Maybe just a little above 6 foot, right? And like you alluded to yesterday, Gronk's 6'7". So that doesn't look like 7 inches there. But, yeah, Rock doesn't look as short there as, you know, I maybe would have expected in a picture with Gronk.
Google says 6'4 for The Rock. Are you throwing the challenge?
Oh, definitely, definitely, definitely. Absolutely. That's another thing. You can't listen to Google on Hollywood actors and stuff like that, right? No way. You can't do that. They're you know, what's the guy in the, you know, the Social Network, right? The guy, the one that's the twins, Armie Hammer, right? I know he's been in the news for some crazy stuff. I met him before. He's on that movie going, oh, there's, I'm 6'5", 230, and there's two of me. And I met him, and I had friends that knew him, and I was like, you're not 6'5", 230, because I am, and I'm bigger than you. So, yeah, they BS with that stuff.
Before we move on to the old business from yesterday, I do want to say this.
Right.
Nearly 15 years with NBC, I have very, very few gripes or complaints that are real. Like, yeah. Sometimes you just act like you're all, like you get upset when there's a technical issue. A little bit upset, not over the top.
Yeah, not like I used to.
But here's my one thing that has made me say, what the hell, a few times. There have been, and this may be why people think I'm short. There have been occasions when I've been standing at that reporter area or elsewhere with someone else from NBC, and there have been multiple people who fall into this bucket who are noticeably shorter than me, and they give them something to stand on. So we look the same height. When I'm standing next to you, or when I used to stand next to Dan Patrick, who's 6'4", they didn't give me anything. So it is twins, and I'm looking up. It's a green giant, whether it's you or Dan Patrick. So maybe that's why. Maybe that's why people think I'm short.
Maybe you're right. That could be.
For whatever reason, they don't let me stand on anything when I'm standing next to you.
Good.
And it's a different atmospheric condition. So
that's
anyway.
Right.
All right. I bought 3 pounds of Taylor ham yesterday. It's coming next week.
Okay. All right, Jersey. All right.
Of Taylor ham.
I like it.
Not quite bacon, not quite sausage.
Yep.
Not quite pork. A little bit human. We'll see.
Very New
grind
Jersey.
It all up, baby.
Sounds like New
Speaking
Jersey
of giants,
to me.
I'll grind his bones to make my bread. Let's grind him up, baby. Let's grind up Taylor and make some ham. So, I'll keep you updated.
Yeah, please
on the
do.
Taylor ham. I'm looking forward to it. Just slice it up, fry it in a pan, throw it on a sandwich with egg. I don't need to have cheese on it, though. I want to do it justice, and I don't know what kind of cheese is on the classic Taylor ham sandwich.
Right.
I'll have to look it up. American, probably. But I don't like that. Like, if I get a biscuit somewhere with egg, cheese, and bacon,
yeah.
I say take the cheese off. I don't need the cheese. The bacon and egg is
funny.
The cheese kind of messes it up for me.
Well, first time, do the cheese just in the spirit of the sandwich, the way it's supposed to be. Try it that way at least one time, and then you can go back to Floria way.
And we've got perfect rolls for it from Tomorrow's Bakery, which, once again, I have no involvement in whatsoever. No stake, no equity. No,
sure.
This is all gratuitous. But I did order the Taylor ham on Gold Belly, and the Tomorrow's various bread products are available there as well. It's not Tomorrow like the day. It's T-O-M. A-R-O. You can get the pepperoni roll, the delicacy here in West Virginia, in coal mining country.
Thank you.
It was invented so that the coal miners could take them underground and have their meal in their hand, not fumbling around with a sandwich. You don't want lettuce falling out on the floor of a mine and then pick that up. Like, you know, if a burger falls at the airport, I'd say it's worse to have a burger fall at the airport and have a piece of lettuce land on the floor of the mine, because all you do is blow off the dust and put it back on the
scene. I would agree. Yeah, I agree. The airport.
I'd say those
worse.
Are the two places in the world where the 5-second rule should not apply. An underground coal mine and the floor of any airport, particularly LaGuardia, back when it was gritty, dirty, nasty LaGuardia.
Agreed. I mean, the 5-second rule is a BS thing anyways, right? If you talk to any doctor or ask them about that, because, like, I think...
Of course it is.
Yeah, but yes, you definitely adhere to those rules.
And, you know, I used to be much more liberal with the 5-second rule until we had a dog, because now the dog's all over the house.
Oh, yeah.
The dog's outside.
Right.
And so anything that hits the ground goes straight to the garbage, because the dog's been walking around in here tracking in, you know, stuff that's outside,
right,
including what the dog leaves behind. On that happy note,
yeah,
that's, well, we burned off 17 minutes today. We hadn't done it really this week. Like, Monday and Tuesday, we got right to it. And here's the other thing, too, that I've noticed. Since you don't work Fridays, like, when they have a snow day now, and I've been in school for decades, I still get a little excited when there's a snow day for some reason, like, because there's no school, even though I don't go. I, like, on Thursday, I kind of feel like it's Friday, Because for you it is. Isn't that stupid? Yeah. I still have to do the show tomorrow, but yeah. I just kind of feel like it's Friday, so we're a little looser.
And, all right, yeah,
you know,
good.
I'm in a better mood.
It's a good day.
I get
good.
Two Fridays a week.
Good, okay, two Fridays
a
week.
I get fake Friday, and then the show ends, and I realize it's really not Friday. I still
one
have
more
to
day,
do
but you're
tomorrow.
There. The light at the end of the tunnel, right? I mean, it's like being in school. You're like, Thursday's still a good day of the week because you're like, man, tomorrow's Friday, and I'm almost there. So you're almost there, man. Keep working, keep chugging away. I'll let you know how it feels tonight with having no work.
For us, as evidenced by the fact that we just spent the last 18 minutes talking about whatever we felt like talking about, every day is Friday, every day is Saturday, every day is Sunday, and I will never take that for granted. We are blessed to have jobs that let us do the things that we do that aren't real work. We really don't work. I've had jobs that I hated. I had jobs where I could have sworn the clock was going backward, not forward. So,
I hear you
yes,
there.
Every day is Friday here at PF.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. I'm gonna shine my way. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
Live. Okay, Wednesday was the day that we got to see what Caleb Williams can do. Never mind the fact that we've seen him do it, you know, on a football field with a helmet and pads on in games for years. Yesterday's the only glimpse of Caleb Williams submitting to the draft industrial complex and throwing footballs to his former teammates at USC in the form of a pro day workout. 50 passes. 6'7", 8 inches. Don't put him next to Gronk without putting him on a box either. 217 pounds. 6'7", 8 inches. Is that right? Boy, he's not really all that tall.
No.
6'7", 8 inches.
I think they listed him at 6'1", right? I think that's what he was listed at USC in Oklahoma, if I remember correctly. So it's just short of that, right?
That surprises me. I mean, Mahomes is a solid 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't well, it surprises you, too, because, again, I think it goes back a little to what we were talking about with you. It's a big 6'7", 8 inches, right? It is long arms.
Long arms.
It is. It's long arms. It's square shoulders. There's thickness in the legs and butt area, right? You can see he's got legs like a running back in a lot of ways. It's one of the things I love about him, right? The workout itself was good. It was a go-through-the-motions workout, right? He's got nothing to prove. He knows he's the top quarterback in the draft. I think he knows there's the Chicago brass right behind him. He knows the Bears want him, all of that stuff. So, you know, I think this was more of just like, go through it. Let me show you how I could throw the football a little bit. But he didn't try to do anything where he was trying to wow people. He didn't throw one sidearm throw. He never got on the run and threw really many. And he's really the one of the best on the run throwing quarterbacks I've ever seen, right? He didn't try to do like, let me show you a Zach Wilson throw, right, that got so much attention, like off of the ground, throwing a post across the field, right? It felt like it was going through the motions. He didn't try to show off or do anything like that. So I can't say it was like an overwhelming wow. Right, Mike? I think you start there. But, man, the way he throws the football, it's effortless. And anybody that sees him, And you can tell on some of the throws, like play back the package again, guys, if you can. That first throw we show on the package, the seam down the middle. I mean, he, like, TV doesn't do him justice because he could throw it so well and the mechanics are so well. I mean, that was a 30-yard throw. He put nothing into it, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's what you see. And that's where, you know, the theatrics of maybe a Brett Favre, huh, and doing all that, Caleb Williams is different. It's a little bit like, you know, Brady. Brady was
the Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, Brady, Rodgers, right. Until you see it in person, you go, ooh, man, it spins a lot more than I thought. It pops out of his hand. And he threw a few other routes in the workout, too, where, again, you know, it looks like he's throwing it easy. But if you don't have a trained eye or haven't seen it a ton, you won't recognize, like, whoa, did that ball and that curl route just pop out of his hands and get to that receiver in, like, you know, a half a second, a split second. But, you know, all in all, it was good. But it wasn't anything crazy over the top. Let me show you all this magic I can do and all that. Like that, right there. That's effortless, just absolute laser. And that's what I love about Caleb Williams.
Hey, and look, one of the realities, too, showing up to make the throws on your pro day workout, you're supporting your teammates who are there working out as well.
Big part of it.
And prefer to have
right.
a quarterback like Caleb Williams there working out because that draws more scouts in. That draws more teams in, and that gets more people looking at them. And there have been stories over the years about how a coach or a GM shows up at a workout thinking about one guy
right.
and ends up focusing right. on the other guy. Isn't that how Bill Walsh found Joe Montana?
I think
looking at Dwight Clark?
I think it was something was that like it? That. I don't know if it was that one. The one I was going to go to in recent history was Chris Ballard. Right, I think they were in Indian or working out Desmond Ridder,
looking at Ridder.
And they saw yeah. Alec Pierce, and they were like, "Holy crap, this kid is like he can run. He's big. He's quick. He runs great routes." And they ended up drafting him. But yeah, there's been a lot of stories like that through time where you know they go there to evaluate quarterback. Quarterback's putting the ball on the money, but they're starting to recognize, "Damn, okay, the receiver here is damn good too." And that is part of your duty if you're Caleb Williams. He does want to make his guys look good and put them in the best position possible.
Not that either guy really worked out the way the Rams had hoped, but they discovered West Virginia receiver Stedman Bailey when they went to Morgantown to take a closer look at Tavon Austin back in 2013.
That's right.
And Stedman Bailey ultimately was shot in the head and survived and tried to come back.
Holy crap, you're right. I forgot about that.
I mean, how in the world can you come back from that? But he at least tried to do it. And Tavon Austin was a guy whose highlight reel makes you say, and this was on Twitter yesterday. My son sent me the clip of the play. He had a pitch against the Bears at some point in his career where he just exploded. Like, how in the world did some team not fully harness the explosiveness of Tavon Austin? How was he not? The tweet said that in an alternate universe, Tavon Austin is a five-time All-Pro.
Right.
And that's really not crazy because he did have an incredible skill set. For whatever reason, it was just never fully unleashed in the NFL. The Rams never knew quite how to use him. And if you put him with a coach who would have gotten more out of him, who knows what he would have become. All right, so back to Caleb Williams. Your takeaway, nothing special, didn't need to be.
Yeah.
He's the guy. We all know he's the guy. It's not like he's trying to hold off Jaden Daniels.
Right.
He's the guy, clearly, unequivocally, and yesterday was just checking the box.
I think so. And he played it safe, right? I think he just played it safe. Like, hey, you're getting to see me. Here I am. I'm going through the workout. Here's the throw, all that stuff, right? He shows variety of throws. That's what he's, you know, again, like Mahomes, that's where he's great. He can throw rifles, but he could do stuff like this, too, where he could just, he's got great touch. I mean, he's got incredible touch. There's really no throw he doesn't have. Now, you know, saying that, he played it safe, it looked good, all of that. Is there a part of me, Chris Sims, that sits here and goes, man, I wish he would have shown off a little bit. I wish like a few of these he would have just gone, I'm going to show you the 100-mile-per-hour fastball here, or I'm going to throw a sidearm one here down the middle like I do in a game and hit a 20-yard crosser. I wish he would have done a little bit of that. You know, but again, I think where he's at in this process and his comfort level and all the things that you alluded to there, I think he just kind of played it safe, went through the motions, checked the box like you said, and said, let's go, let's move on with life.
There was a moment during the day where he sat down with Steve Wyche of NFL Network for an interview, and let's take a listen, if we will, at Caleb Williams' response to Steve Wyche when asked if he expects to be drafted by the Chicago Bears when the process commences in just a few weeks?
It's a good question. I wouldn't say it's my full expectation. Obviously, things can happen. Things can change. I think it's around 33 days or so, 30 days until, you know, April 25th. And so, you know, a lot can change. You take it day by day. Handle and control what you can control.
I don't know how to interpret that.
You want me to go first?
What's your reaction?
Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead. You tell me what you think about that.
I mean, I know where you're going, okay? I mean, and I already know. When you said I'm going to Steve Wyche and all that, and I was like, oh, crap, here we go. All right. But I'm taking it more at when I see that, and I'm going to tell you, I didn't see it till right now, right? Kristen wanted to play and Courtney wanted to play it for me, and I was like, oh, let me just, you know, react to it live. I have not seen this clip yet. But I take it more of, he laughed like, I'm going to Chicago. I already know that, right? But I can't say that. Let me kind of, oh, I don't know. Hey, I'm not sure if they're going to take me. I kind of took it as like he was trying to be humble and not let the cat out of the bag a little bit. That's how I took it. So, you know, and again, maybe we could watch it one more time. Or either way, maybe when you get done with your take on it and dissect it a little bit more. But why? What's your take?
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
That's one way to look at it.
Right.
It's a reasonable way to look at it. This falls into the gulf of reasonable minds may differ. You could look at that and say he's just not being presumptuous. He doesn't want to be the one to say it. The league office frowns upon the premature announcement and disclosure of what a team is going to do. They'd like to have some little sliver of drama that will draw maximum eyeballs into the draft when the draft begins. They don't want it to be known. When the Rams traded up in 2016 to get Jared Goff. Now, but for the fact that the LA Times initially said they traded up to get Carson Wentz, we became all under the impression that it was Goff, 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 Goff. And Jeff Fisher, he'd do that thing. He'd hide behind that mustache. There was always a lot going on behind that mustache. It just hung down far enough.
It was,
really
was good. You
couldn't see what his mouth was doing.
right?
But he'd do those little smirks, and you wouldn't really know what he was doing. But,
right.
You know, he played that game. We don't know what we're going to do. That's part of what the commissioner wants, the league wants. Because if you know pick one, pick two, pick three, pick four, pick five, why the hell are you tuning in to the draft until 9 o'clock? Draft doesn't start until pick five or pick four. This year it starts at pick three because, well, we think it does. Who knows? Tune in the first night of the draft to find out who the Bears take, to find out who the Commanders take, to find out if somebody trades up, trades down, whatever. So that's one way to look at it. He's just being a good soldier. He's not letting the cat out of the bag. The other way to look at it is maybe he's thinking about playing for somebody else, and maybe he doesn't want to make that commitment unequivocally and unconditionally to the Bears now because he knows that there's a process that could go on behind the scenes. And this is something that dawned on me at some point after the last time we spitballed on this idea that Caleb Williams might not want to play for the Bears. That if he doesn't, there's a way to play it that doesn't get you vilified by the fans and criticized by the media as somebody who's coming off as being too good for the process. What's wrong with you? It's an honor and a privilege to be told where you're going to go start your career, even if it's a dysfunctional organization that doesn't have an offensive head coach and you're going to have a different offensive coordinator every other year because you're going to help these guys, you know, springboard their career to becoming what they really want to be, which is the head coach of a team, yada, yada, yada. So I can see why there's a subtlety to it. There's a nuance to it where you don't want to come out and say, I don't want to play for that team. I mean, when Eli Manning did it 20 years ago, his dad did it for him. And it made it look like Archie was just taking care of his kid when it was Eli. Eli went on a visit to the Chargers, and that was when there was a lot of dysfunction there between Marty Schottenheimer, the head coach, A.J. Smith, the GM. And Eli wasn't really sure that they wanted him because one guy did and one guy didn't.
Right.
And the guy who didn't managed to send enough of a message to Eli that he thought, well, they don't want me here. I don't want to be here. Boom. That guy wins. He wins the power struggle. And I don't know. I can't remember if I ever did know which guy wanted him and which guy didn't. But that stuff went on all the time with the Chargers. then. A.J. Smith versus Marty Schottenheimer, and Eli felt uncomfortable, and he didn't want to go there, period.
Yeah.
And he didn't get as much criticism as he should have because Archie came out, and he was the guy who took all the heat for it because he's the one who said Eli doesn't want to play there. So you don't want to be, especially for the guy who's the first one in the NIL era, to say, I'm not playing for you, don't draft me. No one wants to be the first one to do it. Once somebody does it, then I think it gets easier. Bo Jackson was the only one who was blunt about it, and it wasn't a threat.
Yeah.
Hey, Tampa Bay, if you draft me, I'm going to go play baseball.
That's right.
Oh, you drafted me first overall. I told you I'm going to go play baseball.
Yeah.
I'm playing baseball, period. I'm not playing for
John you. Elway was
so
pretty blunt about
that's
it, right?
Part
if I'm, if I'm,
yeah,
if,
yes, he
yeah,
was.
Right, right.
He did not. Yeah, he's the one who was very blunt about it. And one of the reasons he got away with it was 1983.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same saturation of the sport that there is today.
Sure.
It was an AP item in your local newspaper, and that's it. No
right.
talk radio, at least not like there is today. No internet, obviously. No nonstop discussion and dissection and hot takes from everyone. How dare he? Could you imagine Elway today? And that's what Caleb Williams, if he's thinking about it, that's what he doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
wants to work this out in a more diplomatic way, so it just looks like the Bears decided 6'7", 8" is a little too short for us. We kind of like Jaden Daniels better. It needs to be a little more organic for Caleb Williams to not be the guy who is viewed as the villain.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. I don't. I mean, yeah, John Elway, right? I think the harshest backlash he received, he got some, certainly, was like Terry Bradshaw. Remember Terry Bradshaw kind of got on John Elway and called it a bunch of BS and whatever else, right? I remember that, you know, not that I remember when I was three, but I'm a historian and I've gone back and watched the tapes of those things. But, you know, I don't disagree with you. If you're going to not be picked or don't want to be picked number one by the Bears, I mean, you're saying it right. It's a delicate situation. You don't want to get off on the, you know, hey, welcome to the NFL, and I've pissed off every fan in football by looking kind of like a spoiled brat, and I want to go somewhere, right? I want to go somewhere else. I don't want to go there, right? So if that is the case, he's got to be smart about it and tactical and whatever else. But again, I don't get that feeling. I think that comment there, again, was more of, like I said, kind of like, well, yeah, they told me I'm going to be the first pick, like just an hour ago, actually. Like, oh, good question. Yeah. Good question, huh? I know where I'm going. I'm going to the Bears. I'm going to be the – but it was a good question, right? I mean, that's kind of how I took it. And then, Mike, I'll put it on this too. The amount of people that were there by the Bears were – front and center the whole workout. And here's the other part of it that I think locks it down for me, that he wants to go there, he's going to go there, and where it is because of the workout, right? The workout just going, if he didn't feel like he was definitely number one, he would have got out there and showed his ass a little bit and even been like, you're going to take Jaden Daniels, watch me run this way and throw a 40-yard laser to the other sideline. And he would have shown off. He went through the motions and played it safe because he goes, I'm in the process of buying my new apartment in Chicago and I'm going to the Bears. That would be my take. And again, I don't know, but it just feels like that way. Not only, you know, with my own feelings, but just talking to people around the NFL too.
And if I was arguing your side of the case to a jury, I would also point to the fact that near the end of the interview with Steve Wyche, Caleb Williams said, we've got Keenan Allen here for a fourth round pick.
Oh.
Now, he was literally there at the pro day workout.
At the workout.
But
right.
I don't think USC gave up a fourth round pick to get him to show up.
Yeah, right.
So the reference to the fourth round pick, oh, we actually have it. So let's play that. Here's where I would ask the jury to consider the words of Caleb Williams as it relates to the presence of Keenan Allen at the pro day workout. Here it is.
Keenan Allen.
Yeah, he was here.
Yeah, he was here. What about seeing him? And,
it was great.
You guys hanging out for a minute?
Yeah, so I've known Keenan for a little bit now, hung out. He was at the Chargers at the time, obviously. Now he's at the Bears for, like it says here, for a fourth round pick, which is crazy. He had his best year last year.
But, right.
You know, he's a beast. Good guy. Awesome dude to be around. He can give you a lot of knowledge.
Here for a fourth round pick. Here for a fourth round pick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We got him for a fourth round pick.
That's the Freudian slip.
Yeah, exactly.
The Freudian slip, or as someone on this show once said, Freudian slip.
Very.
That was one of your greatest hits as well. By the way, Elway Elway, and I'm looking at this now, refreshing my memory on it.
Yeah.
His dad, Jack,
right,
who was a football coach at Stanford, right? Was he the head coach at Stanford?
No, he wasn't the head coach, but he was part of the coaching staff, at least at some point.
But he was there.
Yeah, right.
His father advised him against playing for Colts head coach Frank Kush, who had a reputation as being a harsh taskmaster, and Elway's leverage was, I'll go play for the New York Yankees.
Right.
You're a New York Yankee.
Yeah.
Now, Bo Jackson actually did it and went to play for the Kansas City Royals, but that was part of what Elway did to finally get the Colts to trade him to the Broncos, and the rest is history. But it happens every 21 years. It's the NFL's version of Halley's Comet. It happened in 83. It happened in 2004. Maybe that means next year it's coming around again. It's just a matter of time, though, Chris, before one of these guys that's got $10 million or more in the bank from NIL deals says, I'm not playing for your sorry-ass team.
No,
your team stinks.
I hear
your team's dysfunctional. I'm not having my NFL career. I got one shot. You can keep drafting quarterbacks in the first round every 3 years for eternity. And I didn't tell you this. It finally sparked for me, and maybe I did say it. I don't know. I can't keep one day from the other, and I can't remember where I said what I've said. But I think that's ultimately why they did right by Justin Fields, because Caleb Williams is watching. Justin Fields is the guy that they took in round one and gave up a future first-round pick to get him. He was Caleb Williams to them 3 years ago. And so we better do right by him, because if things go wrong between us and Caleb Williams, we need Caleb Williams to think we'll do right by him too.
Right. I think there that definitely is part of it, right? The human aspect, doing that, the political aspect, appeasing the agent who's a big power player for Justin Fields. I think there's a lot of things that go into that. There really is. So, you know, but yeah, I don't disagree with that sentiment at all. I don't. And, you know, to your other point with, like, you know, the college players, and it's just a matter of time with the NIL money, agreed with you there, too. You're right. It is only a matter of time. These guys are not going to be coming in the league as desperate, and they're coming in more aware and business savvy than ever before. So, you know, I would think we see something like that, you know, at some point in the next 2 to 3 years. I would not be shocked. I mean, again, you know, last year, this year, we're seeing little barriers get broken down every year here with Caleb Williams not doing the medical stuff, Marvin Harrison Jr. pushing back, right? So I think this will continue to evolve. But I go back to, again, the main sentiment for Caleb Williams, the thirst, the hunger for the quarterback in Chicago. And I'm really serious about this. And I had somebody – asked me this on my podcast yesterday, Mike. I mean, it really is one of the better setups for a number one pick that I can ever remember. I mean, it's up there. When you're talking about a defense that, you know, at the end of the year was really one of the top five defenses in football. It ended up statistically, I think, 12th in football, right? And then we've talked about the weapons they got on offense, the offensive line, all of those things. Right, the draft picks they got this year to even prove the team at number 9. I look at that and just go, I don't remember, especially a number one quarterback going to a team that I go, there's some pieces here right away where I look at it and go, they're going to be competitive, you know, no doubt about it in my mind with what they got. I mean, you know, usually number one, you know, pick, it's Troy Aikman. It's, you know, Elway to the crappy Broncos or the Colts at that time, right? It's Vinny Testaverde to the Jets and our Tampa Bay Buccaneers, excuse me. So, yeah, this is a situation where I look at and go, man, the stars have aligned for him to come in, be the number one pick, and not have to go through a lot of the bumps that, you know, a lot of number one picks at quarterback have to go through.
So, I've yet to find John Elway and Terry Bradshaw exchanges from 83.
Yeah, it's like Bradshaw on a field. It's like he's at a camp or something. And so I can remember it. He's getting interviewed, and he just goes off on it. But go ahead. What did you find?
Here's what I found. January 25, 1990, Associated Press, in advance of Super Bowl 24, and for those of you who don't remember the outcome, I'll mention it in a second. Here's what Bradshaw said about Elway in the run-up to Super Bowl 24, which was going to be Elway's third crack at winning a Super Bowl.
Right.
The first thing I think of when asked to compare John Elway and Joe Montana, said Bradshaw, The first thing I think of is Joe's got three Super Bowl rings, and Elway is more concerned about promoting himself than winning Super Bowls. He's been babied. He hasn't won any championships, and that's the bottom line. He's been babied. Babied by the city until this year, and babied by the coach a little bit. It's just too easy. And you know what I went through in Pittsburgh. There's nothing worse than just getting hammered. You fight that stuff. I think John's got to get tougher. Elway's response to Bradshaw was he can stick it in his ear, although I've got a feeling he didn't say ear. That was 1990. So there was some residual animosity between Elway and Bradshaw 7 years after Bradshaw called him out. We're still looking for Bradshaw calling Elway out for going against. Because I suspect that when Terry Bradshaw was the first overall pick in the draft by the Pittsburgh Steelers from Louisiana Tech.
Yeah.
Shreveport native.
Right.
He probably couldn't find Pittsburgh on a map. Map, another three-letter word he probably wouldn't have been able to spell if you spotted him the M and the P. So he probably did not want to go to Pittsburgh. And guess what? Well done, control room. That's not a sarcastic clap. Here's Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Taking a little crap on John Elway back in 1983.
He didn't want to go to a team that needed his services. The thing in the National Football League is a team with the worst record gets an opportunity to improve by picking the best player. And Elway going to Baltimore would have helped them a lot. And by him saying, I don't want to do that, to me was a slap in the face to the draft and to the National Football League. I could have come out of Louisiana when I was the first player pick and said, well, hold it. I don't want to go up to Pittsburgh. It's ugly. It's cold. The people don't understand a Southern boy. And I want to be close to my mama. I could have done the same thing, but I didn't. I went. And the thing why I went was because they were 1-13. I said, well, I'll go up there and I'll make them a winner. And we did. So the challenge of that and proving to them, everybody, that I was worthy of being the first draft choice was what inspired me to go on and do the things that we've done. And for a guy like Elway to come and say, well, I want to be on the West Coast and I want to be on the beach and I'm a California boy. Well, who cares what you are? You know, and he said, well, I'll play baseball. Play baseball. You should play baseball. Because in my opinion, he's not the kind of guy you win championships with. He never did it when he was at Stanford. I don't think he'll do it at Denver. Personally, don't care if he ever does it.
Wow.
Yeah, you think little crap. You want to rephrase that to a big crap on John Elway?
Spitting fire with a chew in.
I'll never forget it.
When he turned his head, you can see that.
Right.
You can see that little knot in there.
Right.
I used to think that was like some sort of a facial tumor. I didn't realize it was a clot of tobacco in a guy's mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah, Terry. And look, you know what? Terry Bradshaw in today's world would be the exact opposite of that. He'd be the guy leading the charge. He'd say, I'm playing for the Saints. And anybody else that drafts me, you're wasting your time because I ain't coming to your crappy city. I'm staying right down here in New Orleans, and I'm going to chew my tobacco and sit
by my mama.
Porch, and I'm going to wait. And I'm going to wait for the Saints to take me because I got me $15 million in the bank that I made in NIL money. So, yes, how things would have changed for 50-plus years for Terry Bradshaw. So he was fully brainwashed. He was all in with the idea that you go wherever they tell you to go. You submit. You surrender your life to the National Football League.
It's the tale as old as time, right? It's, you know, the old school guy. Back in my day, this is what I did. And I hear it now. I hear it now from people. Caleb Williams.
I bet you're from your dad.
Well, and Caleb Williams, even with that, I hear people, like in the NFL, you know, some of the guys here that work at NBC, and they've heard me tell some stories. I mean, the stuff people are worried about, it's like, you're old. Get off my lawn with that. Well, he painted his fingernails. He wrote FND on his nail once. Oh, Mike, are you kidding me? Come on. That's what we're dissecting now? That's what you guys are doing? That's what you're worried about? I mean, come on. And there's always that faction in the NFL, that old school way. But also, I mean, how about the highlight play of Elway right there? I mean, he ran straight back for 20 yards, turned around, and threw a 60-yard bomb into the end zone. That was incredible. I mean, again, people, John Elway, right now, I feel like the young generation does not realize how awesome John Elway was, right? John Elway was the kind of the Patrick Mahomes of his era. He did things physically where you went, I haven't seen a guy do that before. I haven't seen a guy that big be able to run like that and throw like that, right? And be that big and do everything there and be able to execute an offense. I mean, yeah, Elway, one of the greatest of all time in my eyes.
And Terry Bradshaw's prediction almost came true because it wasn't until 1997 that Elway finally won a Super Bowl. And I can imagine that during that game, Bradshaw was sitting there with his, you know, John Elway voodoo doll sticking pins into the knees. I'm just kidding about that. But he was probably rooting his ass off for Elway and the Broncos to lose.
Well, he was there for the next one.
He wanted to ultimately be right.
Yeah, yeah, I think he had to hand them the Super Bowl trophy in the next one when they were beat Atlanta and Miami, because I'm pretty sure that was a Fox Super Bowl and he was on the podium with them. So hopefully they both could swipe that under the rug and move on with life.
I mean, think about the culture shock for Terry Bradshaw going from Shreveport to Pittsburgh. And then I thought about your dad going from Kentucky, picking his teeth with squirrel ribs, going to squirrel rib bones, you know, as a toothpick, going to New York City.
It was a big adjustment.
That had to be a big adjustment for Phil Simms.
My dad, I can remember growing up and him mother effing the Northeast and New York, like, constantly. He'd be like, "Oh, these mother effing New Yorkers," right? He would go, "Oh, these damn people up here, blah 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 blah." And I was like, "Damn, mom grew up here. She's one of these people, isn't she?" But yeah, he was like that. He struggled with the culture change, the people being so brash, right? My dad, a good old humble Kentucky boy, people telling him like, "Hey, you suck, Phil. You know, go back, go get a turkey Taylor ham and egg sandwich, you jerk off," right? I mean, that's what. So he was like, "What?" Right? It was a culture shock, but, you know, towards the end of his career, if we got in that same car ride, it was like, "Man, this is a great place. New York's awesome. Ah, the New York fans are the best," right? And, I mean, now he's, of course, a full-fledged New Yorker, and that's just the way it is. But, yeah, it took a little time, no doubt, Mike.
I remember there was a time early in our experience together when we were doing the shows in New York for some reason. We're walking down the street, and there was some dude wearing not a jersey. It was like some T-shirt, like some old T-shirt that had 11 and Simms on the back, and it was like something that's been washed way more times than it ever should have been washed, right, and it was about to fall apart. But they love Phil there. Wire to wire for his career, thanks to the Browns not being able to pay his salary.
That's right.
And that's how you cement your legend. You go the distance with one team, and you win, and they'll never forget you. All right, we're going to take a break. We may be forgetting about the kickoff as we know it. That and other rule changes on the docket for the owners coming up next week. We'll get you ready on the big stuff that they'll be considering when PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.